Welcome to the Sport of Kings podcast. On this pod, we discuss the late pick five at Parks on Saturday, September 24th, 2022. This is show number 191, September 23, 2022. I'm Scott Carson, founder of Sport of Kings, and I'm joined by my co-host, Hall of Fame handicapper, Chris Larmy. Chris, I understand there is a mandatory payout of the Philly Big Five on Saturday. I was wondering if you could explain to our listeners what the deal is with that bet and what is happening on Saturday.
Well, normally it's probably the worst bet in racing. It's a jackpot pick five. So unless you are the only person with a winning ticket, which would be pretty unusual with a pick five, then most of the money carries over to the next day. So on a normal day, it would be a terrible pool to get into, but because of the big racing this Saturday, they're having a mandatory payout. So they're going to pay it out regardless of how many people hit it. So it's just like a normal pick five, but with over $100,000 seeding the pool. So what is usually a terrible bet turns out to be, you know, a real player friendly wager going into the pick five this week. So I'm not normally an advocate of playing this bet at Parks, but this weekend, an all-stakes pick five with $100,000 seeding the pool. That's pretty good for players.
And let's see. I'm quickly trying to bring out the takeout. Is it a high takeout there?
No, actually, the takeout isn't bad. It's 15%. The true takeout, if you count the carryover, it's really high on a normal day. But for tomorrow, it's just a 15% takeout. Plus the $100,000 seeded pool, relative to any other pick five, this is about as good as you'll get in terms of takeout and being player friendly.
Okay.
Now, if Tommy were on, he could care less, as we talked about last week. But for most of us, you know, I'd rather get a bigger payout if I win than a smaller payout. And I think most players would agree.
Indeed.
Play in the Sport of Kings NHC qualifier starting every month. Each month, the top 50 players who are NHC Tour members advance to Round 2, which is Breeders' Cup weekend. In that final, 450 players will duke it out, playing all 14 Breeders' Cup races. Two people will win a seat to the NHC, and the top 100 will get Tour points. Join the NHC Tour before any monthly Round 1 begins. If you join the Tour, you could win up to 20 seats to the NHC in free contests. For only $50, it's the best deal in racing. If you sign up for the Tour, use promo code SPORTOFKINGS so we get credit. If you haven't signed up for our free contest with free DRFPPs, go to sportofkings.net right now. Thank you and good luck.
And we have a special returning guest. He's the chief figure maker for Timeform US, and he has his own podcast with David Aragona, the DRF Forecast. He's Craig Milkowski. Craig, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me. I think it's been a while, which is mostly my fault. I know you guys have reached out a few times, hasn't been able to work out, but I'm always happy to come on and join you guys. I'm not only a guest at times, I'm a weekly listener as well.
All right. Well, I think the last time we had you was mid-October last year, so it has been almost a year. Hopefully we can get you on a little bit more often, but we also know you're busy with your own podcast, which is outstanding and one I listen to as often as I can.
I appreciate that.
Question, how's your handicapping going lately and what angles have served you well?
It's been going really well. This is probably one of the better years I've had in a while. And I don't like saying that really, but it's true, especially Saratoga. I just had a good meet. And for me, I do my best when I just focus on one race at a time. I know we're going to talk about a pick five sequence in here, but and we do on our podcast as well. But I'll often bring up vertical plays as well. That's really my strength and what I'm best at. I tend to try to beat too many favorites to do great at pick fives. There was one I hit pretty early in the year on our forecast that I actually did play that paid like 17,000. So I'm going to have a good ROI on those for the rest of the year at least. But it may be the only, maybe I hit one other that paid like 1,000 or something. But for the most part, I stick to the vertical bets, especially factors. Some trifectas, I don't really get into superfectas. I don't like them since they went to 10th at minimum. I don't think you get the value on the long shots that you used to get when they were a dollar. So I would say I'm a win player, and then exacta and trifectas are my big thing. And I stick to the races I know best. As a speed figure maker, I make the figures for a ton of races, from the cheapest of the cheap maiden claimers all the way up through the stakes. But obviously the ones that stick out the most are the better horses and the bigger numbers. And they're the ones that I remember and I have the most insight into. And I think they're the most formful horses. So I tend to stick to the better races, be it turf or dirt, going long or short. That doesn't really matter. Those are kind of my sweet spot. I really like the good horses.
Well, we've got some good quality races today, so hopefully we'll get some insight from you. Chris, do you have any questions for Craig?
Well, do you make the figures for Parks typically, Craig? Is that one you do?
Parks is one I do not typically do, but I'm probably a 20% do Parks. It just depends on the day of the week. If the race was on a Monday, I likely did it. Or if it was on a Thursday, I likely did it. If it's on a Tuesday or Wednesday or the weekend, my assistant probably did it. We kind of have most tracks broken down by a schedule, but a few are split a little bit like Parks is, and that's one of them. But it really doesn't matter. We basically do things exactly the same way. People who listen to our Pacecast on Tuesday where we recap, I don't always have all the figures, but I'll usually give an estimate, and it's very rare that I'm not within 1 point of what my assistant comes up with. So it really doesn't make a difference who does them. He doesn't try to, you know, he doesn't try to be too creative. He sticks to the system that we use.
So, you know, since you do some of the numbers, any kind of insight, anything unusual about Parks or things, anything you notice about that when you do the figures that maybe stands out or differentiates it from other tracks, or is it pretty much run of the mill?
You know, Parks is a pretty easy track to make figures for because they run a ton of dirt races. They'll run a few turf races here and there. And when they do, those are kind of a little trickier. But the dirt races are by and large pretty straightforward most days. It's funny you mentioned that, though. One of the days we're going to talk about, the day when the Smarty Jones was run and the Catherine Sophia, was a very tricky day. And we'll certainly talk about those figures, especially when as it relates to Green Up and her race.
Great, great. I was hoping to get a little insight. I've noticed I don't regularly play Parks, but and typically it's on like days like this when I do, but I do know a few times in the past the rail has been pretty bad. Not all every time, but there's been a couple days where by the end of the card, you know, the riders were all trying to get out in the three or four path from, you know, get off the rail. So I don't know if you've noticed that is something that happens often.
That does happen often at Parks, and it's something. If it's gradual throughout the day, we'll kind of split the variant because we don't build ground loss into our figures, as you know, but sometimes it's apparent that something happened because the later races are all coming back slower. But for the most part, I'd say the days are either the rail's bad or the rail's not bad. And it's pretty consistent through the day. And the jockeys there have all rode there for a long time. For the most part, they all seem to know it. And they avoid it when it's bad. I don't know how they know. Maybe it's training in the morning, but it seems to be pretty apparent if you watch a couple races. The one caution flag I would put up is that trend doesn't usually seem to apply on Pennsylvania Derby.
So typically you've seen that it's not a bad rail on the big day like this week, and you kind of expect it to be a fair playing track based on
right.
The past.
And yeah, and I won't play the early races. The stakes start pretty early, but I'll definitely watch a few of the first couple. There's some maiden races and an allowance race, and just see how it looks, see if the jockeys are avoiding it. But for the most part, on the big day, the track usually seems fast and the rail seems fine.
Great. Well, let's hope that's the case. But like you said, probably worth watching some early races to see if anything stands out.
All right. We're going to start with the ninth race. It is the Turf Monster, a grade three. It was won last year by 108-1 that was later disqualified. And I don't remember whether it was projected to have a fast pace or not, but it was won by a closer. This one is projected to have a fast pace. Craig, why don't you get us started?
Yeah, that race last year was something. And it's funny you bring that up. I think that was a Juan Vasquez horse that was disqualified. And we actually have a horse in this race, the two horse, Surprise Boss, who was also a former Juan Vasquez horse. He's one that is only 5-1 on the morning line, but I am totally tossing him since those horses, as if people don't know, he's been suspended in most racing jurisdictions. His horses have mostly shown up in the barn of Rafael Rojina, and they have not run well at all. And Surprise Boss is one of them. He gets Irad Ortiz in here. So he probably will take some money, but he's not one that I'd be interested in. We do have this as a fast-paced race, but I also think it's a tricky fast-paced race because the horses we show up there with the leader, That's Right, the one horse. I don't think there's any doubt that That's Right is the speed of this race. He always opens up quick. The two we have chasing him are dirt horses. They've never run on the turf, or if they have, it hasn't been in a long time. I think Breezy Gust ran on it once quite a while back. So it's a bit of a crapshoot if those two can really press. I mean, Uncle Ernie, the five horse, is a very fast horse on the dirt. Usually horses can show that same speed, but it's not a given for sure.
Okay. That said, who do you like in this race?
This is one of the most perplexing races that I've handicapped in a long, long time. And I don't say that lightly. It is one where when I first looked at the inside horse, That's Right, I was really surprised by the morning line. I was like 3-1 on a 3-year-old trying older with kind of weak speed figures. I didn't really get it. And then as I looked through the field, I was like, oh, wow, this race came up pretty darn weak. I'm not sure where all the 5-furlong turf sprinters are, the older ones, but they sure didn't show up here. That said, I'm still not a huge fan of That's Right. I just don't think he's that fast. We saw what happened when he faced really good horses at Saratoga in a listed stakes. He was not even pressured and just finished way back in the field, next to last, beaten off easily. So he's not the kind of horse I want to take a short price on. It's one, if I'm playing a pick five, I'm going to spread, but I'm going to use a couple of horses that are double digits on the morning line. My top pick would be a horse, Boats Are Rockin', the 7 horse. He's a horse who hasn't sprinted in quite some time. When he did sprint, they were in cheap claimers at Penn National, but he ran very well in those, and he's certainly a different horse than he was back then. He's a horse who's been routing exclusively, has just crazy speed. He runs off on the lead. He's one that sometimes he hangs on, sometimes he doesn't. But I think in this case, he's going to be able to sit a couple lengths off that pace and really be finishing at the end with the conditioning he has. So he's one I'm very interested in a price. The other long shot I'm going to use in here is the 8-horse War Toxin. He's a horse who has not been on the dirt in quite a while, or on the turf in quite a while. But if you look through his PPs, which you can in Timeform US really easily, you can scroll through the entire history of the horse. And he has run it on it a few times. He hasn't won, but I thought he ran just fine when you compare it to his dirt form at the time.
he is one who's definitely going to be coming from off the pace. So I wanted to give him a bit of a shot too.
Well, Bo Cyrak in your top pick, it's interesting stats. He's 8 for 15 on turf, 2 for 4 at the distance with 2 seconds. So 4 for 4 in the exacta and 1 for 1 at Parks. Chris, where are you at in this race?
I pretty much agree with everything Craig said. I think that's right. As a 3-year-old, I just don't, to me, he's a big underlay in here, but he certainly has speed. And from the rail, if he, breaks away normally does, he'll be the one they have to catch. And that's always dangerous at 5 furlongs. In terms of the pace, keep in mind that last year, it was a really boggy, funky turf course. And I think the weather forecast is really good, and it should be a completely different course this year. So 5 furlongs on the turf to me is always kind of a speed game. Even if you get a race that looks like it's all horses that want the lead, usually the one that wins is the best of the speed. It just doesn't fall apart very often going 5 furlongs on firm turf. So that, that's the way I'm going to handicap this. So as much as I like to completely toss, that's right, I probably can't just because of what, Craig said. But the two horses he mentioned that are going to be up front with him, if they run, show their same speed they show on dirt, on turf, are probably the two I'm the most interested in. I do like the horses that Craig mentioned, but the two he talked about on the front end are the two I like the most. As value plays, I have a hard time splitting them, but I know Scott will want me to pick one. So I'll go with the 5 Uncle Ernie. Although I'm going to play both and key both. Uncle Ernie, very quick. I think he's the one that can, be the closest to that's right. Maybe even faster. Who knows? He's never been on turf before. His breeding doesn't scream turf, but going 5 furlongs on firm turf, I don't worry too much about the breeding. I'm more interested in are they quick? And he's definitely quick. The other question mark's the layoff, but he comes from a pretty good layoff barn and he gets Rosario on. I am thinking maybe they've got him entered as sort of an unofficial MTO. So if they scratch him, it wouldn't surprise me. But if he does run, that would tell me that they did enter him intending to run him on the turf, which I think is a good sign. So to me, Uncle Ernie, lots of upside, very quick. If he handles the turf, he's ready off the bench. He definitely could win in here. And you might get a pretty good price because of those question marks.
Well, I'm going to have to agree with Craig that this is it's a cluster. It's a cluster F. And I had a really hard time with it. I ended out, the closer I looked at it, I saw everybody wants speed, and everybody has speed, and not only that, but even horses that don't appear to have speed, when they've won, they've shown speed. So I do expect a meltdown. And I am going to use those horses that that Chris is talking about, that Craig mentioned, the Uncle Ernie and Breezy Gust. I think Breezy Gust is the other one, Chris. but I'm going to make my top pick Heroes Reward, who is also a dirt horse, but has won closing. The trainer is hitting it 21% at the meet. He has fast dirt numbers, and his turf numbers, he's done nothing on the turf, but they've come off like really big tops or off layoffs. And I can just see this horse, winning at 50-1, even though he's only 12-1 morning line. I like that the trainer and the jockey are always together. The trainer's hitting at 21% of the meet. So I want to include this horse, but I would also go deep, and I'll mention some of the other horses after you guys share some more yourselves.
Another horse I would interested in, and he's a little bit of a shorter price, is Nothing Better, the 4 horse. He's a horse who pretty much primarily sprints. He went long last time and actually ran pretty well. Think maybe that race will give him some fitness. He doesn't have to have the lead. He's won from slightly off the pace. And I'm with Chris. It's a little tougher for me to look for closers in these 5 furlong races because they're more likely to hit the vertical spots. If I'm going to play one, they need to be a really big price like the one you picked, Scott. That's what I would be. I don't want a closer at 3-1 in a race like this. But I think nothing better could be close up. And as I mentioned in the beginning, it's a spread race for me. It wouldn't, depending on how it all shakes out when I try to put a ticket together. And there is likely to be a pretty big carryover on this as well, as long as the Big Philly 5 isn't hit today as we record on Friday. As long as it's not hit then, it's going to be a nice carryover. And, you know, I don't want to get knocked out in the first leg, so I'm going to spread pretty deep in which just a really tough race for me.
Yeah, I, like I said, I'm going to lean towards speed. And Breezy Gust is the other one that you talked about. You mentioned it too, Scott. He has won turf race at Parks, which wasn't really bad at all. He's only beaten 3/4 of a length. And that was when he wasn't in very good form. I think he was really good last year, and then something went wrong. He got hurt. He got eased in a couple races in a row, and they laid him up, and he never really got back to his good races throughout the first half of the year. But then he joined this new barn, and now he's back in good form, and Paco Lopez gets on. So to me, you know, he doesn't necessarily have to be on the lead to win, I don't think. I mean, he's come from off the pace in his last two. So, you know, he could sit a perfect trip maybe off a dueling Uncle Ernie, and that's right, and just, you know, get a dream run. And he could be a price. And then if I was going to pick one to come from a little off it, it would be the 11 Smooth B, who has, you know, he's got tactical speed, so he's not going to be too far off. But he has been able to finish before. You know, he can win on the front end, or he can come from off it like he did last time. So, you know, those are the other ones I'm interested in. And I'm pretty sure, I'll have to check, Greg, but I don't think Parks is running today. So I think we're safe in terms of the carryover.
They are not. Yeah, they're not.
Yeah, so we're going to have a carryover.
Okay, well, this is a tricky race. Go as deep as you can. That's the advice that I would give. Let's move to the next race. It's the Gallant Bob, the 10th race. It's 6 furlongs on the dirt, purse of $300,000 for 3-year-olds. Chris, why don't you get us started?
I like this horse in here quite a bit. That's the 8-horse Witty. This horse is turf. I mean, dirt sprints have all been really, really good. And not just good. If you watch him, he's just really powerful through the turn and finishing off races. And I think this is a race that could be a pace meltdown. There's a lot of speed in here. And going 6 furlongs on the dirt, you know, speed's a good thing to have, but you're more likely to have a race fall apart than 5 furlongs on the turf. So, you know, Witty, to me, is really solid. If you know, they tried him at Kentucky Downs last time out, I think, or no, it was just a turf route and at Parks. And he got a kind of a no chance ride, and he's not a router. And they tried him routing one other time, and it wasn't very good. But if you look at all his dirt sprints are great. You know, he didn't win his debut, but he ran second. And then he just crushed the field in all his other dirt sprints, except for the one where he ran second to Provocateur. But if you watch that race, he got completely left at the gate. He spotted the field like 15 lengths, had no chance whatsoever, and he still ran second. So, I mean, to me, I'm a little bit nervous about the slow starts, but assuming that he doesn't, you know, pull a start like he had the last time he sprinted, I think he's going to be tough to hold off late, especially with all these sprinters that are going to be really running hard on the front end are probably going to be getting a little leg weary late. So because of the muddied up form, he's Whitty's 12-1 on the morning line. And, you know, to me, that's great value.
Whitty is 2-3 at Parks and 4-4 in the exacta at the distance. Craig, where are you at on this race?
This is another one where I'm going to spread a little bit. I do get narrower in the latter leg, so it's not like I'm going to play a $1,000 pick five kid or anything like that. But I like a few in here. I did want to use Whitty. My one concern with Whitty, I'll let Chris bring this up, is he's had trouble at the start twice in a row now, and that's kind of a negative for me. Maybe it won't help or hurt too bad if the pace gets hot, but it seems to be of his own doing. So I'm always a little leery of horses that don't want to come out of the gate. As far as this race goes on the Timeform US speed figures, it's a big field of 14, but we have it as a race rating of 118. So I wanted to kind of focus on the horses that could at least run a 115. And I started that with the horse that ran the fastest last time on our numbers, and that's Running Son of a Gun, who ran a 122 figure. I'm a little dubious on that one. I wonder if it's not one of those suck-along figures where he just kind of ran around the track behind Jack Christopher and Gunite, who were both in front of him. They're both really fast sprinters, but he just kind of, you know, followed him around. I'm just not sure what to do with him. I'll definitely use him on my pick five. He's going to offer some price. He's not like he's going to be a short price, but I don't love him as much as I thought I would when I first saw that number. A horse I'm really interested in and would be my top pick in here is the 12 horse, A Lot of Hope. He was a horse who kind of burst on the scene at Laurel. He was running solid, just kind of toiling in the allowance races, didn't run very well on Preakness Day, tried the turf, it didn't work out. And then at the end of July, the light just seemed to go off. He won a stakes race by 15 lengths that day, the start in Nascra. He got a 119 speed figure, and it looked to kind of come out of nowhere. But then he backed it up when he went to Charlestown and ran in that 2-furlong, 7-furlong stakes on Charlestown Classic Day. He did it with a little different style. He came from off the pace that day. He didn't quite run as fast the speed figure. I think some of that's due to coming off the pace. He had a little trouble. He got hit at the start coming out of the gate. I think that was part of why he was back as well. But I really like the post position here. I like the versatility he's shown, and I think he's got a pretty big shot at double-digit odds.
Okay, well, I'm gonna land with Chris on Whitty. Let me see what I had down for him. I only had he has the best numbers and is a closer. I was a little pressed for time today. Now, there's another horse that I'm also interested in that I'd be using, and that's Little Vic. He does project. He's second on the time form pace projector. I don't know if he'll be that close. I do understand about the hot pace, but I put him down as a use because he's got a little circle back pattern that I like. So I would use Whitty and Little Vic.
Yeah, I did mention the slow starts with Whitty are a little bit of a concern for me as well. Although I think in this case, he doesn't want to get left at the gate like he did a few races back, but if he breaks a little slow, that might not be a bad thing in this race. And I'm with Craig on A Lot of Hope. That's the other price horse I like in here. Just, I'm not sure what happened, but he suddenly has run a couple of really big races. So a repeat of either of those last two could certainly put him in the mix here. So if at a big price, I don't know why you'd want to leave him off if you're playing a pick five. The only other horse I'll mention is Nakatomi. He's got that classic pattern we talk about all the time, second off the layoff. He was pretty good as a two-year-old, so and he can sit off and finish. So I don't think you're getting a great win price on him, but to me, he may, you know, get a good trip in here. Gets Joel Rosario on a closing sprinter is usually a good thing. But I have a feeling he might actually end up getting bet down below that. So from a value standpoint, maybe not great, but, you know, he's definitely one of the contenders.
And as I mentioned, I will probably spread in this race. We haven't even mentioned the morning line favorite, Provocateur, who's a lukewarm 4-1. I don't know how much you can take this morning line seriously. Whoever made it, it adds up to way, way too many points, like in the 150. So I think you can kind of take it with a grain of salt. But I have no real knocks on Provocateur. He ran fine in the Jersey Shore. He was able to beat several in this field by two lengths. I don't want to totally dismiss him. Some others I would talk about as, I said I want to spread. Little Vic, you guys already talked about. He was involved in a pretty torrid speed duel in what was basically a prep for this race at Parks when he finished third that day. And also some others who come out of that very same race, Scaramouche on the outside. He's got a nice pace set up, had good tactical speed, pressing what was a really fast pace, took over, and was able to win that race pretty easily. So I do like him a bit in here. And not to go too deep, but this is how I will play this card. I'm going to spread pretty wide in here. I don't want to totally dismiss Lightning Larry either. He was a horse who had kind of a hidden tough trip to me. He had a little bit of a tough start in that Jersey Shore, which several of these are coming out of. He rushed up, pressed what was a pretty quick pace. And for me, the hidden part of the tough trip is around the turn, while he was dueling for the lead, he kind of got caught in between horses. And I just hate that trip. It never really seems to work out when you have horses to your inside and your outside. So he's a horse who's shown plenty of promise. He dusted the field in the Chick Lang Stakes. He had run some fast races as a two-year-old as well. So he's one that's going to be a price that I want to have on my ticket too. I know that's a bunch of horses, but that's the way I'm looking at this race.
Yeah, this race is pretty crazy as well. It's the first two parts of the sequence are the toughest, I think.
Yeah, I think all the horses that Craig mentioned are contenders. But so how would you describe the pace scenario? Because to me, I just don't see how this doesn't really heat up with three or four of them really going hard at it on the front end, which is kind of why I was leaning towards horses that can come from out of it. But I'm just curious what you think, Craig.
Yeah, that's certainly possible, but while I agree with what you said about turf sprints, it's very hard to close in those 5-furlong races. I still think what generally happens in these races is somebody close to the pace will take over at some point, and they're still usually tough to run down. It is a little easier for closers. They definitely have more of a chance, but I hate totally dismissing the speed horses just because they're speed in sprint races at 6 furlongs. One of the questions Scott asked me about in the beginning was some of the things I've been doing, and I've been having a good year, is I've really been paying attention to post position, particularly in sprint races, and trying to avoid inside speed for the most part. There's been a lot of horses I would have bet in the past that I've avoided, and it's worked out for me. It just seems the outside post, it's kind of hard. Like if you do post position stats, it's not always going to show up because you get so many different running styles in certain posts, and you have to look at what they look like going into the race, not necessarily how they ran in the race, in my opinion. So it's not something that's readily apparent, but I just think that speed horses in sprint races really flourish when they're outside. And part of that is because they don't necessarily have to make the lead to be clear. They can be sitting 2 or 3 wide with nobody to their outside. And I think that's a great trick. Whereas if you're the horse on the inside, it's just race long pressure and it almost never works out.
That would, I mean, Provocateur is not a speed horse, but he does like to be up kind of close. So that's a potential negative for him.
Yeah, I definitely think it is. I think he is. I mean, to me, he's a speed horse. He's got to be within, up near the lead. And so I would think that post is disadvantaged for him.
For sure. And that's when I say speed horse, it doesn't necessarily have to be a horse on the lead. It's when you sit and look and you try to envision the trip Provocateur is going to get, what's it really going to be? Is he going to be 2 lengths off but 5th? That's not a good trip, particularly if there's horses to his outside. So it's a tricky spot for Irad Ortiz. He's not the most aggressive rider in these dirt sprints, so I wouldn't expect him to gun out of the lead. Maybe he'd try to work his way outside, but it's going to be tough to do in this race, I think.
Yeah, and if he tries for a pocket trip, then, you know, is this horse going to eat kickback all the way around the track and then finish? Probably not. I mean, a factor that people really underrate in dirt racing is kickback. It just has such an effect on some horses, and especially in sprinters that typically are out in the clear. When they get in behind horses, they might completely lose interest.
Tough race, but let's see if we can get on to an easier one. We'll go to the 10th. The 11th. It's the Cotillion Grade 1, mile 16th on dirt, purse of $1 million for 3-year-old fillies. Craig, what are you thinking here?
Well, I think you have to start your analysis with this race with Secret Oath, the Kentucky Oaks winner, morning line favorite. And I've done a preview video for her already for DRF for this race. My podcast with David, and I certainly can't waver from the opinions I gave there. And my opinion is I don't want any parts of Secret Oath in this race. He's a 3-year-old filly who's heavily raced. We really don't see these kind of campaigns anymore. And what I don't like from her is since the Kentucky Oaks, her speed figure has basically been stagnant. She hasn't improved at all. And to me, I just have a sneaky feeling she's tailing off a little bit. It doesn't really show in her results. She ran second in the CCA Oaks and the Alabama behind Nest. But I just didn't see the same explosiveness, the same quick turn of foot to be able to seize command in those races. And in this field, she's facing some really talented lately raced horses who have actually run faster than she has. I'm going to focus on two of them. I'll probably use three horses in the race, but I'll start with these two. I know Scott likes us to make a top pick, so I'm going to go with another horse coming from Charlestown, and that's the Outside Horse Society. She ran a huge speed figure winning the Charlestown Oaks that Friday night. She got a 120 from us. It was a 125 final time figure. I know that's just a 7-furlong race. It is around 2 turns. But she's a horse who's handled a mile and a 16th in the past. In that race in between the Coaching Club of America Oaks, where she was a distant 4th behind Nest, she was actually only beaten 5 lengths by Secret Oath that day, and she had an absolute nightmare trip. She had a terrible break at the start. She rushed up into the really fast pace being set by Nest. In Timeform US, all the fractions are color-coded in bright red. They were in the 140s. And I actually thought she hung on pretty well. So she's one that I definitely like in this spot at what's going to be a nice price for sure. And the other horse I like is to the inside, Green Up, the Todd Pletcher filly. He has a few in here. He's the one I like the most. He ran a 121 speed figure when in the prep for this race at Parks, the Catherine Sophia. I think that speed figure's totally legit. It was the one I was talking about that was a little problematic for making, but I'll come back to that when I talk about the third horse I'm going to use in here. Talk a little bit about the speed figure, but I don't doubt that it's a solid number. It's just it wasn't as straightforward to make as some others are.
Society, 1-for-1 at the distance, and Green Up is 4-for-5, I believe. Chris, what are you thinking?
Well, I kind of agree with everything Craig said, but there's another horse he hasn't mentioned that I like a lot, and that's the 2-horse Adair Manor. She had a lot of talent all her career, and I think she was affected by the whole Baffert thing. His horses trained by Yachtin that shipped out didn't run that well, but she's been back in his barn. He's taken his time with her, and then the last few months he really tightened the screws in the way Baffert always does. So you get a string of 6-furlong bullet workouts, and some of his horses can take that kind of training, some can't. This filly has been taking it really well. I've watched her recent workouts, and she's just been dusting workmates, and she's been running against colts and older horses that are stakes horses. And she just looked really good. And I think she has tremendous upside. She's got tactical speed. I just expect her to run a really big race in here. So I don't think you get a great price, but there are a lot of options in here. And so I think she's probably not going to be the favorite with Secret Oath in here. And I just think she's going to run really big. So I'm going to lean a lot on the two. I just think she's going to run a big race.
Okay. I landed on Goddess of Fire. I think she looked pretty good in her last race. Although I didn't watch a replay. I didn't have time to watch a replay, but the numbers say to me that she's about to run the best race of her life. She's carrying only 120 and is about as fast as Secret Oath. So she's my top pick. But I also would absolutely use a Dare Manor. And I saw her get off the van and she looks ready.
Oh, there it is. The van walk off handicap from Sony.
That's what I mean. But Adair Manor is the third horse that I was going to use, and I'm not going to dwell on it too long for all the reasons you guys mentioned. She's been working just crazy good. The one slight knock I would have on that, and it's not a knock, but she always works like that. She always has. If she had been allowed to run in the Kentucky Oaks, she would have came into that race with the two fastest time form U.S. speed figures going in. Would have been a player. Obviously, she couldn't run in that race. She went to the Black Eyed Susan. Didn't run as well. She didn't look as good that day, but I think something clearly went amiss that day. She just didn't run her race, went back to the bench, and she would definitely be the third horse I would use for sure. No knocks on her at all. The one concern I would have is all of the ex-Bob Baffert horses. Like, if you run stats on Bob Baffert since he came back from his layoff, they're all very good. But when you really sort through them, most of that comes from two-year-olds. The horses that he had in his barn prior who are returning to his barn are 4 for 17, which obviously isn't terrible. Most trainers would kill for 4 for 17, but it's a really low ROI. I don't think a single one of the horses has went off above 3 to 1 in that 17-horse sample. A lot of low-price horses, so I'd be a little bit leery, but the works have been so good, it's hard for me to ignore completely. I'm not gonna get knocked out if she wins. What I wanted to mention about the green up speed figure is it was a day when they ran the Smarty Jones as well, the race after. And while Sparks is usually a really easy track to make speed figures for, it wasn't so much that day. Best Actor won the Smarty Jones. When you compared the times of the Smarty Jones at a mile and a 16th to the Catherine Sophia at a mile and 70 yards, they just really made no sense whatsoever. If those were the only two races on the card and I rated them together using the same variant, this Catherine Sophia that Green Up comes out of would have actually been even a lot faster than the 120 that I gave her. And Best Actor, who I think is actually running in the Oklahoma Derby on Sunday here in my hometown of Oklahoma City, got a 117 that day, would have actually been substantially slower. And neither one of those would have made any sense at all for not just the winners, but the entire field. So it was just the case where I couldn't rate those races together. Broke out the Smarty Jones completely from it. But it has no effect on my figure for Green Up. There were other races on the card, and these two were just screwy for some reason, and it happens. But I'm going to bet her like that 120 she ran is totally legit.
Yeah, the only thing I would add is on Adair Manor, even the race she ran in the Black Eyed Susan, I mean, she was parked really wide all the way around that day. So I thought it was actually better than it looked. It wasn't probably her best race, but still, I thought it wasn't as bad as it looked. I mean, she really did get, you know, parked.
Yeah,
it wasn't a great trip. My concern with her, she didn't really show her usual early speed. She had never been much off the lead in a race that was pretty quick early, but nothing she shouldn't have been able to handle. She was just kind of floated out wide. Maybe Johnny Velasquez was just a little overconfident in her. She seemed a little dead on the board, to be honest, that they had 2-1. On paper, she kind of looked like a even money or 4-5 shot, really, but didn't turn out that way. And whether you thought she ran good or not, I think she something clearly was amiss because we haven't seen her since.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, you know, the fact she's been gone for off for so long probably means something did go wrong. But even, you know, to me, even her C effort wasn't that bad. And that was way back in April and May. And so the way she's training, and you look at her, she's pretty impressive specimen physically. I just think she may have, you know, just be the best horse in here. But, you know, let price be your guide. Certainly if like Green Up or Society or even Goddess of Fire, who I don't like quite as much as those other two, of all the ones we've talked about, probably after Adair Manor, it would be Green Up would be the one I'm most interested in, just because she seems like the now horse that's really gotten good here recently. You know, it'll be interesting to see. You know, this is another good race. I mean, this is a pretty good field. And Parks has kind of got a nice place on the calendar to hold these races because, you know, the three-year-olds with a pretty much their last shot at a grade one against three-year-olds, except for the Malibu, and that's really more of a sprint for the Colts. It's, you know, it does seem to attract pretty good fields every year.
Yeah, the one thing I would say for Scott's selection is you should go watch that replay, Scott. It's interesting. I don't know if it would change anyone's opinion one way or the other, but I don't know what she was doing. She almost kind of bolted on the turn. I was there that day at Saratoga, and I think she was closer to me on the apron than she was to the inner rail coming through the strip.
Talking about Goddess of Fire?
Yes.
Interesting. Yeah, I definitely want to watch that replay. Honestly, I like the look. I know that Secret Oath has run a lot this year, but I like the look of her pattern and the... I would absolutely use her. I'm concerned about that 126. She's carrying 126, which is 6 pounds more than some of these. And that's a big burden to carry. But I got to watch that race just to see how she finished up.
I would say these grade one races, they really need to get rid of these weight differences. They should all be carrying the same weight.
Yeah, I totally agree. If it's a grade one race, then you should be on equal weights. I mean, if that's what the idea is, these are supposed to be the best horses going head to head, then they shouldn't be getting, you know, weight breaks.
All right, well, we'll move to the marquee event of the day. That is the Pennsylvania Derby, grade one, mile and an eighth on dirt, purse of $1 million also for three-year-olds. And Chris, it's your turn to get us started.
Yeah, it's nice to have a graded stakes for three-year-olds with a big field. We don't usually get these, so I really like that. And it's a pretty deep field, so interesting to handicap. And we're all familiar with these horses, and we all probably already have some biases and opinions. And I try to start with a clean slate, but it's really hard in a race like this. And I just have to keep coming back to Taba, who I just think is better than these horses. I mean, in his second start of his life back in April, he ran as fast as any of these have run pretty much. I mean, you could, maybe they've gotten a little bit better, but I just think at a talent level, he's better than these. I picked him to win the Haskell, but I said I thought maybe he was being rushed a bit, and because he hadn't been Baffert Barn for long, and I thought he was going to run a really big race. If it wasn't in the Haskell, it'll be the next time out, and well, this is the next time out, so we'll find out if I'm right. If I am, I think he will win here impressively. I thought didn't get the best of trips last time. And one thing, this horse, he's kind of a head case. even if you watch his workouts, he's just a lazy horse. He just doesn't do anything without encouragement. And he does, clearly based on his Derby and Haskell, he does not like being in behind horses. He sulks. I don't think he likes kickback. But the frustrating thing was, that's what Mike Smith said. He didn't like that in the Derby. And then he breaks on the lead. He wrangles him back and sticks him right in the pocket. And the horse sulks and gets shuffled back in the backside. That was what I thought was why it was such a bad ride. It wasn't because of what he did after that. It was the fact he knew that you don't want to stick this horse in the pocket. And he did it anyway. And he broke on the lead. So I thought it was a terrible ride by him tactically. He's back on, but he drew an outside post. And even Baffert saying this horse doesn't like to be in behind horses. So I think he's going to keep him in the clear. And if he does, and he pedals on him in the backside, doesn't let him get lazy on him, I think he's going to win this pretty impressively. So I don't think he's a win bet, but I'm going to lean on him a lot in the pick five. And I do think after him, it gets kind of interesting, and there's some interesting ways you could go. And so I'll be interested to hear what Craig and Scott have to say.
Taba's going to be on the probably right outside of We the People. And the only question is, you know, does he run a huge race like he did in the Santa Anita Derby? Craig, what are you thinking?
I'm torn on Taba. I'm with Chris. I think he is the best horse in the race. But the other thing Chris mentioned troubles me a little bit, and that's the big field, because as he also mentioned, he is a bit of a head case. He needs to be ridden a long way. So Mike Smith really needs to be aggressive with him. And I'm just not sure Mike Smith is a great fit for this guy. He, like you said, he's got to be ridden a long way. I think you got to really start getting him into him on the backstretch. And I just don't know. He's not a horse I want a short price on. He's one I will definitely use on my ticket because I think he is the best horse. I think there's a good chance he could win, but I think some others offer some value. So from a single race play, I'm going to look in a little different direction. And a couple horses to the inside of him, I really think are going to run well in here. One of them is Zandon, Chad Brown's horse. We're all familiar with Zandon by now. And the biggest thing for me is I don't think he really wants a mile and a quarter. He ran fine in the Kentucky Derby. He ran fine in the Travers. But it's just a little too long for him. And it's not just his breeding kind of points that way. But when you watch the races, he really seems to hang in that last furlong. So I like to turn back to a mile and an eighth. I'll actually like this horse a lot more if he runs in races like the Cigar or the Met Mile. I think one turn miles would be perfect for him. But from the inside post, I think it's a good spot in here. There's no Epicenter who seems to be his nemesis. He's got a very good record, but it would look a lot better if that horse didn't exist. He would be even stronger. So I think Zandon might get overlooked in here a little bit. The other horse, so he'd be my top pick. The other horse I think is going to get overlooked a bit because he seems to always get overlooked is Skippy Longstocking. He's a pretty fast horse. On our speed figures, he's just as fast as everybody else in here, save maybe Taiba because he ran the same speed figure in the West Virginia Derby at 124 that Taiba did back in April in the Santa Anita Derby. So if that one improves, he's a little quicker, but otherwise, he's just as fast as everybody else and just seems to get overlooked, maybe because of the connections, maybe don't really know why, because he's running all the big races, but he didn't even go all favored in the West Virginia Derby. And I think he's a good horse. He's got good tactical speed. He can finish off the race. So I think he's dangerous at double digit odds.
I'm going to use I agree with Chris that Taba could be a monster and could run a gigantic race. So I'm absolutely using him. But my top pick is going to be the 6, We the People. You know, his last race didn't look that great. He had a pretty easy lead, but it was in the slop. And, you know, he got passed by one horse, Skippy Longstocking, who, by the way, just seemed to really relish that ground. So I think Skippy Longstocking just, you know, that the mud propelled him, Whereas We the People, it was more like a prep for this race. That he ran as well as he did is perfectly respectable to me. He still closed pretty well. He finished in less than 13 seconds. And his numbers are similar to Taba, but he's 12-1 morning line. So that's my top pick. I will absolutely use him. Those are the two horses that I would probably be sitting chilly with, We the People and Taba.
Yeah, I pretty much agree with everything you all said, including what Craig said about Mike Smith. I just got to believe that he has learned something riding this horse a couple times. But I would love to have somebody other than Mike Smith riding as well. And Skippy Longstocking, certainly he ran well, and We the People did too. The one thing I'll say about Zandon, because probably he would be my second pick after Taba, is that kickback was really bad in that last race. If you look at Zandon when he was coming down the stretch, he's just like coated in mud from head to toe. So, he did flatten out a little bit, and maybe I kind of agree with Craig. You know, I think the cutback will help him, but he also ate a lot of dirt. I don't know why they keep that track so wet, but I mean, some days it just really, the kickback's like a sloppy track almost.
I actually put that in my comments too. I said he's completely covered in kickback.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know why, but for some reason, Saratoga, they keep that track really wet. And sometimes that kickback's brutal. And he was obviously positioned in a way where he was taking a lot of it. And that adds up over the course of a mile, you know, a mile and a quarter. So I think that race, even though he did not, you know, they could say he hung against Cyberknife and Cyberknife was gritty. I still think Cyberknife was out in the clear the whole way. He didn't need any kickback, and he was game. I'll give him. Cyberknife's not a bad horse at all, and it wouldn't shock me to see him win. I just think he'll be an underlay in here. But Zandon, you know, I really do think he ran better than it looked in that last race. He definitely wasn't going to beat Epicenter, but I think maybe he could have run a little better.
Funny story about that race. I was actually visiting family in Baltimore, and I really don't want a red board. Trust me, I lose way more tickets than I cash. But I had played a straight exacta in that race of Epicenter over Cyberknife, just hammered it pretty hard. I'm watching the race on my phone. They get to about the eighth pole, and I was like, okay, I'm done. He's beat. And I turned it off. I closed my phone and, you know, I was kind of peeking out of the corner of my eye. And about 3 hours later, I went back in to look at something and saw my account had ballooned and was like, what the heck? And I assumed maybe there was an inquiry or something. I didn't even know. And sure enough, I had no idea that Cyberknife had any chance to hold on for second in that race. So I do want to give him credit for being game, but I'm kind of with you, Chris. I much prefer some others in here.
Okay, we'll move to the last race of the sequence. It is the 13th, the Alphabet Soup Handicap, a mile and a 16th on turf, purse of $200,000 for three-year-old Pennsylvania breds. There's so few Pennsylvania bred turf horses that there's like five dirt horses in this race. Craig, where did you land here?
For me, this is a single. This was quick and easy. I can't see by land and see losing this race. They're PA breds. I think he's raced against PA breds three times in his career. He's won by a total of about 20 lengths. Unless they gang up on him and tie his legs together before the race, I just, there's nobody even really close to him for me. So that's why I feel a little able to spread in some of the other legs, particularly the early two, because he's the only horse for me. Emotionally and for my mental health, I hate singling in the last race, but I can't see any reason to spend money on anybody else.
Okay, so he also figures to be the only speed in this race. Chris, what are you thinking?
Yeah, the speed thing is the thing that worries me the most about trying to beat him. Is he He certainly seems to have a tactical edge. I'm not sure he lays over the field, though. And the horse I kind of like, not a big price, but the 6-horse Midnight Hauler, he's really bred top and bottom to be a turf horse. He actually debuted on the turf, but then they ran him on the dirt, and he won, and they just kept him on the dirt because he was doing pretty well against the competition he was facing, which was probably Pennsylvania breds mostly. He was doing pretty well, but then this year he was just a completely different horse, and he's both times they put him back on the turf, which they finally did. I guess they probably don't get a lot of opportunities to run on the turf. But he's been impressive in both of those races. I think he might still have some upside on the turf. And from a number standpoint, he's not that far behind Byland & Cie, at least the recent races that Byland & Cie has been running. So I don't know. I mean, probably he's going to be hard to catch that one. But I kind of think Midnight Hauler has a chance to upset Byland & Cie. So I don't think he's quite the same lock that Craig does. But I get where he's coming from for sure.
Well, Midnight Hauler's one of my horses. I initially, when I first looked at the numbers, I said Midnight Hauler was the horse in this race. But just to let you have that one, Chris, I decided that I kind of like to wait for it as well. And, you know, the wait for it has been rounding into form. He finished second in this race last year, so I figure he's probably targeting this race. They are targeting this race. He has enough speed to keep Byland & Cie a little bit honest. I think he can pull the mild upset. He sports his best workout in years coming into this. He also has a couple of wins on the synthetic. So even though he doesn't have any wins on turf, he does have a second in this race last year. And I think he didn't even look as good last year going into this race than he does this year. So I'll say wait for it, but I'm also going to use Midnight Hauler. I'm going to try to beat Byland & Cie. And the other horse I would probably use is You Must Chill, who won this race last year. Not much value, but, I don't see any reason why he can't run a good race.
I don't know, Craig, you might probably don't have much to add, but if you do.
No, for me, it's just a speed figure thing. I mean, this horse runs above 110 nearly all the time, and nobody else is above much of a 104, 105 type horse. And given his tactical edge, that's just too much. He faces better competition repeatedly when he runs in New York, and he does pretty well. So it would just be a real stretch for me for anybody to make up that big of a gap. I have no problem. He's not going to be 5-2 like he is on the morning line. He's probably be 3-5 or 4-5. So it's not like it's any great value here. But just since I'm being pretty liberal in the early legs, I'm going to stay with him. I'm not going to, you know, any horse I would add is going to double, triple my ticket price. And I don't want to do that when it's pretty much a lock.
Yeah, I'm kind of hoping maybe somebody will try to go with him, keep him honest up front. If they don't, I don't see him losing. But maybe like the 2 Stonegate or maybe even Scott's horse 4 Wait For It, hopefully they could maybe put a little pressure on him. If not, he certainly, even if they do, he probably could still win. But if he gets clear and sets his own pace, he'll be tough to overhaul. There was one other long shot, kind of a stretch, but the 3-horse Irish Cork, you could look at his form just casually and say, oh man, his 2 turf races have been awful. But the most recent one was on soft going, so I'm willing to forgive that. And I, like I said, I think the forecast has been pretty good for today and tomorrow. And so we should have a pretty firm turf course. And his other one was in this race last year, but you know, he didn't run at all, and then he was off for almost 8 months. So something probably went wrong there too. So I don't know if you can completely say he can't run on turf. I think because of those races that that will be what everyone concludes, and nobody will play this horse. But his dirt numbers are good. His breeding's pretty turf neutral. And, you know, he's never really had a chance to run on a firm turf. And so, you know, he might surprise, because to me, from a pattern standpoint, he looks like he's pointed to a good effort in here. And the fact that they're trying him again after those bad turf races tell me they must think he can handle it, or they just figure, you know, this is a state bred purse, so we'll try it even if it's on the turf. We'll see. Could just be that, and he runs another terrible race on the turf. After, if he does it again here, he has no more excuses. But he's the kind that could surprise. You know, sometimes if you dig a little deeper, you can find a nugget. That might be the case here, or it might be fool's gold. We'll find out.
Well, that last race, I'll say, I mean, it's labeled as soft. If there was a different designation that was like even softer, like Charmin or something like that, it would be it. That course was a complete and total bog. It was nothing like we see here in the States.
Yeah, and that's another reason why I was kind of wanting to try to beat By Land and Sea and maybe trying too hard, because I thought, you know, that race made him look better than he really was. Not that he wasn't the best horse, but I mean, that kind of a track can exaggerate the margin of victory and the differences from first to third and fourth. So the fact he kind of trounced some of these horses on that day might, you know, lead people to believe he couldn't be beaten, that none of these horses could turn the tables on him. They probably can't, but I will note that Midnight Holler wasn't in that race. So he's kind of a new foe for By Land and Sea on the turf.
Okay, well, that does wrap up the pick five. Do we have any spot plays at this track or any other between the two of you guys?
I can't say. I've been so busy with these races, I haven't really looked at a single race at any other track other than I did a preview with David Aragona for the Athenia Stakes, but that one was no great shake. So unfortunately, I don't have anything to add at this time. Apologies. Just haven't had time to look at anything but parks.
Yeah, I do actually have a horse I like in the race that leads into the pick five, the eighth race. It's a mile and a half race. I think it's a race where Fearless will get really pounded, and probably justifiably so. He's been very good, and he's certainly taken to these marathon distances. But there is a three-year-old Western River who ran his best race by far at a mile and a half. And, you know, he's bred to run these distances. He's a full brother to Creator, who won the Belmont. I just would completely toss that race on the turf at Kentucky Downs. So that kind of muddies up his form. And, you know, his last time he tried this distance, he was really good. And he's getting a big weight break as a three-year-old. He's getting a seven-pound break from the favorite Fearless and many of the others in here. And, you know, over a mile and a half, that's probably worth, you know, I don't know, four or five lengths maybe. So, and he gets Flavian Pratt riding him. So to me, he looks like a possible player at a pretty square price. And you probably could get that 8-1 if they really pound Fearless down. And there's a few other horses they could bet. The defending champion from last year is in here, Magic Michael, the three horse, and a few others. So the two horse Western River in the eighth race, I think, is a pretty solid play.
Yeah, that's a nice goal. He's a horse. We talked about that race at a mile and a half when we did our recap for that week, and it was pretty impressive performance. And I just wanted to talk because you mentioned Fearless. We had talked about Taba having to be ridden from a long way out. If you want to get a workout, just watch Luis Saez have to ride Fearless, because this is another horse you just have to get into from a long way out. And I don't know how he does it. And I wonder if it's going to eventually take a toll on this horse. He has improved at the longer distances, but he has got to be exhausting to ride.
Yeah, especially at the long distances. It's one thing to do that, you know, but at a mile and a half, that's a lot. That's a workout.
All right. Well, I would like to thank our guest, Craig Milkowski. Craig, thanks for handicapping with us today.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure. I enjoy handicapping with you guys. And then most of the other weeks when I'm not on, I always give a listen. You guys do a really good job and I appreciate it.
All right. Well, it's great to have you. And that will conclude show number 191 of the Sporting Kings pod. Good luck at parks and wherever else you play. And please enjoy the Brooklyn Boogaloo Blowout.
I'll see you on Sporting Kings. Cheers.
Yeah.